Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine, episode 156 for Friday, May the 1st. Coming to you just a little bit late. I'm your host, Paul Douglas Boyer. I hope you caught the Planet Boyer episode, the Paul Boyer Show, which I released just immediately prior to this show. On that episode, I talked about iPhone earphones. I talked a little bit about super gluing your teeth. Talked about some very unique running shoes. My friends bought a Chevy. And what Twit sounds like to me. So make sure you go and check that episode of Planet Boyer out, the Paul Boyer Show, prior to this show. Coming up on this episode of the Mad Money Machine, I'm going to talk about the impact of swine flu. I'm going to talk about an additional quote that I forgot to read from The Dollar Crisis. We'll have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. Machine is very proud to be brought to you by the wonderful folks at Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. Take their risk capacity survey to see just how you should be investing your assets. So last episode of Mad Money Machine, I talked about the dollar crisis, and there was one quote from Richard Duncan's book that I wanted to read that I forgot to read to you. It's at the very back of the new edition of the book. He says, "An economic system underpinned by large-scale fiscal stimulus financed by central bank monetization of government debt could hardly be described as capitalism." Perhaps the term Bernankeism would be appropriate. "But with any luck, it could stave off disaster for a considerable length of time." Now, you remember this book was written in 2004, and he was talking about the coming crisis in the financial markets. And he says this, I'll read it again. He says, "An economic system underpinned by large-scale fiscal stimulus financed by central bank monetization of government debt could hardly be described as capitalism." Okay? You know, I've talked a little bit on the Mad Men Machine before about losing your faith in capitalism. Well, it's not losing faith in capitalism. It's losing faith in the current markets that they are not capitalism. I think that's a more appropriate way of putting it. You know, if we had capitalism, I'm all for investing in it. But I'm not sure I'm all for investing in authoritarianism. although, the DFA video that I've mentioned a couple of times, they point out that the stock markets in some of these lesser capitalist countries has done quite well. So don't worry about investing in a non-capitalist country. Just invest in the companies that make the capital. Let's have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel, roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 156 is G. Edward Griffin. G. Edward Griffin is an author of a number of books, but I think his most popular book is one that I've alluded to several times, mentioned several times, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Now, he was on Andrew Horowitz's podcast, The Disciplined Investor, a couple of episodes ago, and it was a very good interview. I appreciated Andrew contacting G. Edward Griffin and having him on his show. And so I encourage you to go and look for the episode of The Disciplined Investor on which G. Edward Griffin appears. Well, so I went back and picked up the book. Actually picked it up even before he was on the Disciplined Investor. I wanted to answer this question. Oops, there's my alarm going off. I wanted to answer the question, who creates the money to pay the interest back to the bank? You know, we've gone round and round in the past about this whole where does the money come from idea. And G. Edward Griffin answers it in his book on page 191. He's got a section here which is called Who Creates the Money to Pay the Interest? Let me read this section to you a little bit. One of the most perplexing questions associated with this process is, where does the money come from to pay the interest? If you borrow $10,000 from a bank at 9%, you owe how much? If you borrow $10,000 at 9%, well, after a year, 9% a year, you'd owe $10,900, right? But the bank only manufactures $10,000 to give you for the loan. It would seem, therefore, that there is no way that you and all others with similar loans can possibly pay off your indebtedness. The amount of money put into circulation just isn't enough to cover the total debt, including interest. This has led some to the conclusion that it is necessary for you to borrow the $900 for the interest, and that, in turn, leads to still more interest. The assumption is that the more we borrow, the more we have to borrow. And that debt based on fiat money is a never-ending spiral leading inexorably to more and more debt. Well, here's how G. Edward Griffin addresses this. He says, this is a partial truth. It is true that there is not enough money created to include the interest, but it is a fallacy that the only way to pay it back is to borrow still more. The assumption fails to take into account the exchange value of labor. Let's assume that you pay back your $10,000 loan at the rate of approximately $900 per month, he says here. Gosh, that's 9% a month. And that about $80 of that represents interest. All right, let me see if I can follow what he's saying here. Let's assume you pay back your $10,000 loan at the rate of approximately $900 per month. Oh, you pay it back at $900 a month, not the interest. He says, of the $900 per month, $80 is the interest. Okay, so he's got a couple things confused in there. The $900 in the earlier paragraph and the $900 here. Here's what he's saying. Here what he's saying is you just pay back this $10,000 loan at $900 a month, and of that payment, let's say $80 represents interest. Okay, now you're with me. You realize that you are hard-pressed to make your payments, so you decide to take on a part-time job. The bank, on the other hand, is now making $80 profit each month on your loan. Since this amount is classified as interest, it is not extinguished as is the larger portion, which is a return on the loan itself. So, this remains as spendable money in the account of the bank. The decision, then, is made to have the bank's floors waxed once a week. You respond to the ad in the paper and are hired at $80 a month to do the job. The result is that you earn the money to pay the interest on your loan, and this is the point, the money you receive is the same money which you previously had paid. As long as you perform the labor for the bank each month, the same dollars go into the bank as interest, then out the revolving door as your wages, and back into the bank as loan repayment. It's not necessary that you work directly for the bank, you see. No matter where you earn the money, its origin was a bank, and its ultimate destination is a bank. The loop through which it travels can be large or small, but the fact remains that all interest is eventually paid by human effort. And the significance of that fact is even more startling than the assumption that not enough money is created to pay back the interest. It is that the total of this human effort ultimately is for the benefit of those who create fiat money. It is a form of modern serfdom in which the great mass of society works as indentured servants to a ruling class of financial nobility. And what we need to figure out, ladies and gentlemen, this is Paul Douglas Boyer speaking. What we need to figure out, ladies and gentlemen, is how to become part of that financial nobility. Well, congratulations, G. Edward Griffin. You're the guru on Mad Money Machine Show 156. What's the impact of this swine flu pandemic alert going to be on our financial situation? What toll is it going to take? I guess unless you had invested in some of these virus vaccine maker stocks prior to the outbreak, then I'm not sure what the impact is going to be other than negative on airlines, hotels, rail travel, all kinds of amusement parks and things. Negative impact other than on the pharmaceuticals. And, of course, on growing the size of the government, and all the government employees can now be employed by putting in place special situations to handle quarantines and so forth. So I guess that's a good impact. If you're a public servant and you work in a job that allows you to quarantine other people, then you're going to make out pretty well with this swine flu outbreak. Now, what does Wikipedia have to say? By the way, Wikipedia is a good source for keeping up to date on the number of laboratory confirmed cases, the laboratory suspected probable cases, and the total number of confirmed or suspected deaths according to this swine flu outbreak. Now, they say that the 2009 swine flu outbreak is a spread of a new strain of influenza virus that began in March of 2009. The new strain of this virus is a type of influenza A, H1N1 virus. And the virus responsible for the outbreak has also been called the H1N1 influenza and the 2009 H1N1 flu. Local outbreaks of an influenza-like illness were first detected in three areas of Mexico. The virus responsible was clinically identified as a new strain on April 24, 2009. Following the identification, its presence was soon confirmed in various Mexican states and in Mexico City. Within days, isolated cases and suspected cases were identified elsewhere in Mexico and in the U.S. and several other countries. By April 28th, the new strain was confirmed to have spread to Spain, the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Israel, and the virus was suspected in many other nations as well, with a total of over 4,000 candidate cases, prompting the World Health Organization, WHO, to change its pandemic alert phase to phase 5, which is defined as, quote, human-to-human spread of the virus into at least two countries in one World Health Organization region. While most countries will not be affected at this stage, the declaration of a Phase 5 is a strong signal that a pandemic is imminent and that the time to finalize the organization, communication, and implementation of the planned mitigation measures is short. Well, despite the scale of the alert, WHO officials noted on April 29th that the majority of people infected with the virus have made a full recovery without the need of medical attention or antiviral drugs. They go on to say in this article that the new strain is an apparent reassortment of four strains of influenza A virus subtype H1N1. Analysis at the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention identified the four component strains as one endemic in humans, one endemic in birds, and two endemic in pigs or swine. One swine strain was widespread in the United States, the other in Eurasia. Although called swine flu, due to it predominantly containing swine strains, the World Organization of Animal Health have proposed the name the North American influenza because this new strain is in its entirety has not been found in swine or pigs. Worldwide, the common human H1N1 flu virus affects millions of people every year, and these annual epidemics result in about 3 to 5 million cases of severe illness and about 250,000 to 500,000 number of deaths a year in the normal human virus. In industrialized countries, most of these deaths occur in those 65 years old or older. So for those of you out there that think government is trying to take on more power, here's more raw meat for you. Here's more raw meat for you in that government can take on a lot more power if they declare a pandemic and can implement the planned mitigation measures that the government needs to do to contain the spread. I found this quote interesting in survivalblog.com. They recommend investing in Smith & Wesson. There was actually an article in Barron's magazine that said they had a buy on Smith & Wesson. And the folks out at Survival Blog said, I second the motion, but I have to be more specific. Make it one of the early stainless steel Smith & Wessons with the pinned barrel and recessed cylinder. Pinned and recessed. For revolvers, you can't go wrong with an early production model 629, like the 6-inch barrel length, except for concealed carry. But the Barron's article didn't give any details as to what specifically they recommend. What's that? Oh, you say that Barron's only owns Smith & Wesson stock. Well, you can't stop a charging grizzly with a stock certificate. Invest in tangibles, according to Survival Blog. Let's go to rehab.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no.
Active Investor Rehab is the place where active investors can take a 12-step program to help them become to invest the right way, the passive way. And I use the material out at indexfundsadvisors.com, indexfundsadvisorsifa.com, that is, and from the book Index Funds, the 12-step program for active investors, written by Mark Hebner, president of IFA. I want to talk this time about step 8, risk ease, the language of risk. Yeah, we're skipping around different steps, all right, a little bit. That's all right, because you keep listening to the show. We'll cover them all, no doubt, and you will be on the road to rehab. Let's talk about the dimensions of stock market return. Prior to 1992, researchers didn't have a very good idea about what sources of investment risk actually produced higher returns. See, because prior to 1992, they only had William Sharpe's one-factor model to explain how investment returns were derived. Well, his one-factor model explained only about 70% of the returns of the stock market. In 1992 was when Eugene F. Fama of the University of Chicago and Kenneth R. French of Yale University developed a three-factor model to characterize and describe the relationship between risk and the return for stocks. Their model was essentially an extension of Sharpe's one-factor model. See, Sharpe said that the amount of a portfolio invested in stocks is the most important determinant of return. The Fama-French model, though, added two other fundamental determinants. They sought to determine the factors that best described why there are differences among the returns of stock asset classes over long periods of time. They first studied the period starting in 1964, which was the year that reliable computer data was available. They later updated and confirmed with data dating back to 1926. In short, they tried to identify the factors that explained the remaining 30% of the returns left unexplained by Sharp. And what were those two additional factors? Well, they Fama and French concluded that exposure to three risk factors are the market, which is what Sharp said, you know, you're in the stock market as opposed to the bond market, but then also the size of the companies that you're investing in and the price of the stock that you're buying, the market price relative to that company's book value. Okay, so you want to buy a low-priced stock compared to the book value of the company. And these three factors collectively do the best job in pinpointing the sources of investment risk that account for the stock market returns. Risk factors are the source of risk that the stock market seems to reward over the long term. Based on the Fama-French findings, these three risk factors constitute the dimensions of stock returns. The three risk factors combined explain up to about 95% of the returns of the market in U.S. and foreign stock markets. Their findings suggest that an investor's investment performance in comparison to the stock market or other investors depends almost entirely on the percentage of stocks held in a portfolio, and more specifically, the amount of small stocks, small company stocks, and high book to market ratio stocks, which are value stocks. So those holding more small company stocks and or value company stocks should have a better investment performance over the long term. Exposure to the size factor is determined by the amount of a portfolio that's invested in small company stocks. The greater the exposure to those small company stocks, the higher the return in comparison to large company stocks. It's important to understand that the average return for small company stocks have significantly outperformed large company stocks over the last 80 years by how much per year do you think? According to this article at IFA.com, small company stocks outperformed large company stocks over the last 80 years by 3.13% per year. But to get those higher returns, investors must accept a step up in the uncertainty of the returns. So you're taking on more risk when you invest in these small company stocks. But that's the source of the returns, is the risk. In short time periods, the small company stocks don't always outperform large company stocks. In fact, the size risk factor fluctuates unpredictably. And that's consistent with the random walk theory of changes in stock prices. The value risk factor is determined by the amount of a portfolio with exposure to high book-to-market stocks. In other words, when a stock's market price is less than its book value, the book-to-market ratio is greater than 1, as the price being in the denominator divided into then the book value would be greater than 1. The greater the exposure to the price factor, the higher the historic and expected return in comparison to low book-to-market value stocks. High book-to-market companies usually have low earnings and experience other signs of financial distress, and investors don't like these stocks for these reasons. As a result of their poor track records, the market drives down the prices of these stocks. This naturally makes them riskier to investors. And stocks with low book-to-market ratio have low book values relative to their market prices and are termed growth stocks. Investors like growth stocks because they're perceived to be the great companies and therefore less risky. They represent successful companies with strong track records and healthy earnings. So next time you're building your investment portfolio, don't forget all three factors in Fama French three-factor model. Not only the assets that you need to invest in the stock market itself, but also in small companies and in value companies. I know that you're going to make it to become a passive investor, and Rehab is here to help you. Brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. I urge you, if you're changing companies and you need to move your 401k plan to an IRA, to contact Index Funds Advisors and let them handle that for you. They will help you manage your financial freedom. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. This is something that I use quite a lot, and I'm not sure if you are aware of it or not. I think I've mentioned it before on the Mad Money Machine, but I can't be sure that I have, so I wanted to make sure that I did on this show. And that is not Google Spreadsheets, but a function inside Google Spreadsheets that helps you get current stock market prices. And it's a function that's simply called Google Finance. And in a Google, open up a Google Spreadsheet, and in a cell, let's say cell A1, you type a ticker symbol of some stock or mutual fund or index ETF. Let's take, for example, the Brazil ETF EWZ as the ticker symbol. Type that into cell A1. Then in cell A2, or B1, I guess next to it. Let's say B1. In the cell next to that on the right, type in equals, the equal sign, the equal symbol, Google Finance, capital G, capital F, and then parentheses, A1, end of parentheses, and then hit return. What you will get back is the price, the current market price, I guess that's the price that actually traded most recently, of the index fund EWZ. Of course, you can change the ticker symbol to be whatever you want. Now, you can copy that row down to row 2 and put in a different ticker symbol like FXI, the China index fund. And then in row column B, then you'll get the price of the China index fund. And then maybe in the third row down, you type in GLD and copy B2 to B3. And you'll get the current price of the gold exchange-traded fund. Then in the next column over, you can multiply, you can enter the number of shares of each one of those you own. Then in the next column over, you can multiply the shares by the price, the current price brought to you from Google Finance, and you'll get the total portfolio value of those assets that you currently own. And then you can do a summation at the bottom of column E, and you'll get the total portfolio value of the assets that you hold. So the tool in the crib this week is the function call called Google Finance, which brings back stock market quotes into a Google spreadsheet. Like other tools I've given you so far, it is free. The best things in life are free. You can keep it for the birds and bees, not give me money. That's what I want. As I mentioned on episode 3 of Planet Boyer, the Paul Boyer Show, my Dell computer is on the fritz, and that is where my spreadsheet is that I calculate the lazy portfolio returns. I'd kind of like to go back and calculate several time snapshots of the lazy portfolios and see, for example, how that Harry Brown permanent portfolio with gold in it is still doing compared to the other portfolios. And so I'm hoping to get that back someday to be able to calculate that for you. When I do, I will let you know, and I'll have it all here on the Mad Money Machine. I'm so glad that you're with me this week. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money. And it takes investing in Smith & Wesson to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next week. And in the meantime, up until I see you again, please point your web browser to Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. Have a great week, everybody. Wash your hands. Stay away from that impending flu pandemic. Quarantine yourselves in your homes and listen to the Mad Money Machine and Planet Boyer. See you next week.